So this is the Palo Alto VA Medical Center. I worked in the building sort of that way for like 25 years, and now I'm at Stanford. But our host today is Dr. Graham Creasy. He's a staff physician here and formerly the head of the spinal cord injury unit here. And he's going to introduce the VA to us, and then we're going to go over to the assistive technology lab, look at some of the stuff there, and then end up at the in the therapy room later on. We'll have a lot of time for hands-on. You'll have a lot of time to ask questions and try out things. So be prepared to both have fun and learn. Okay, you're on, Graham.
Well, learning should be fun. And I'll take that from Dr. Sills, who's our co-host today. He's the psychologist who runs the assistive technology lab here at the VA. This is one of 153 VA hospitals around the country. And it has a particular interest in disability and technology. It has one of 24 spinal injury units that deal with people who've broken their back or broken their neck and been paralyzed by that. It's also one of five of the main centers in the country dealing with multiple injuries, often called polytrauma, and a lot of those injuries are head injuries. And you can imagine that the recent wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and the Middle East have led to a lot of spinal injuries and head injuries. In fact, they say that head injury is the signature injury of the recent wars. Spinal injury is really one of the signature injuries of the Second World War. There's so many people who had a broken back or a broken neck in the Second World War. That they decided to put all those sort of patients in just in designated hospitals because they almost all died in 3 months. Breaking a neck was a death sentence. And so they put them all in a few places out of town where they thought they could just be cared for until they died. But because they were all concentrated in one place, the staff started to notice the patterns of why they died and what went wrong and what were the complications. And they started thinking about how you could prevent these complications. And so by the end of the Second World War, they found that they'd been keeping people alive. And if you were kept alive, albeit paralyzed, then you'd have to think, well, now what are you going to do with your life? Can you go back to work? Can you go home? Can you be active? What are you going to do with the rest of your life if you're paralyzed? And so that led to the whole specialty of spinal cord injury. It really just since the 1940s. It didn't exist before because people didn't survive. And then, because now we're, as often happens in war, we learn a lot about injuries like head injuries as well, because there have been so many from different devices, soldier devices, in addition to injuries like bullets and shrapnel. And the common thing about the head and the spinal cord is, of course, it's part of the central nervous system. And it's heavily protected by the bone of your skull and the bone of your spine because it's so crucial, the control system for the body. So injuries to the central nervous system are typically major, typically permanent, because they don't repair in the same way that injuries to nerves in the peripheral nervous system. You cut a nerve in your arm or your leg and you sew the ends together, you get a fair chance of recovery. Not so in the brain or the spinal cord, unless we can make more progress in stem cells. That's what's happening in California right now. So up to now, we've depended on technology to try and get function back if you're disabled. And that goes all the way back, of course, centuries, things like artificial limbs and artificial body parts, or prostheses as they're called. Wheelchairs, special beds, special mattresses, all the technology you need to live with if you have a disability. And in the 20th century, a lot more engineering technology came into it, with smarter devices and communication technologies, particularly things that came out of Silicon Valley. So people started using electronics for communication and for controlling your environment, even putting electronics inside the body to connect to your nervous system directly and to try and get signals between computers and nervous systems and brains and that. And so there's work going on at Stanford to put chips into the brain to get signals out and put signals back in. So it's a very fertile field, and we just scratched the surface here. Obviously, you're talking about this a lot during the class that you're playing with Dr. Jaffe at Stanford. So this is just an exposure to a few points on that and a chance for you to ask questions and see these things in use by patients. So we won't turn, I know time's tight, so we'll head on down to the assistive technology lab down in the end of the building. Anything you'd like to say about that?
No, I think we'll head that direction. I have two of my clinicians, an occupational therapist and physical therapist, and They have some limitations on their time, but they want to be available. So we'll do some hands-on trials, information, let you check out some of the different types of equipment we use, find that's the most beneficial. And then we'll continue to be available for questions after the fact. And then I believe there's also a spinal cord patient who's...
Yes, we've got a couple of patients up here. Exactly. All being well, we hope to stop by and come back.
Yes.
So that way you guys have a greater opportunity to get more hands-on experience with the equipment.
You got, come on right
here. We got lots of room.
First people I'd like to introduce right off the bat is Karen and Debbie. They're outstanding assistive technology professionals, which is an additional degree, additional to their core degrees, which is occupational therapist and physical therapist. And they'll provide, they do work here in the lab and throughout the healthcare system providing AT support. And I'm just going to turn it over to them. They'll provide a general overview of some of the service they provide. And then what we're going to do is split you into two groups. And Debbie's going to go outside and look at some of our mobility and adaptive sporting equipment. And Karen and I will be in here to look at some different other types of equipment.
Then we'll swap.
Yeah, and then we'll swap back and forth. So you get, everyone will get a chance to work with both parts of the equipment. So if you guys want to jump in, get an overview.
Okay, so here in the Assistive Technology Center, we cover a lot of different areas of assistive technology. The first is environmental control, where somebody can't use, say, a standard light switch or remote controls for their TV. We can do all sorts of ways for them to access their environment. We do electronic cognitive devices, so people with memory or cognitive impairment, we can help them kind of ways to be more independent, ways to remember things. Also a lot of school aids, things like that. We do computer access, so someone who doesn't have traditional means to access a keyboard or a mouse, we have alternative ways to get them on the computer again. We do augmentative and adaptive communication, so somebody who has difficulty speaking, whether it's due to surgery or due to a disability or a stroke or what have you, we have alternative ways for them to communicate, whether it's something low-tech, just like a communication board with a laser, which we can show you, or something high-tech, which is a device that's going to speak for them. We also do power mobility, complex seating, and adaptive sporting, which Debbie can talk a little bit more about.
Well, I was just going to say, we bring the veterans in here, and then they have a chance not only to reevaluate them, but they have a chance to trial out different devices. And so that's one of the benefits of having an actual, you know, center like this, is to do the trials, because you don't know what's really going to work best for them. And we always start, like Karen said, with a low-tech option, or working with a device that they already have and see if we can add on to that before we start going to the higher tech stuff. So that summarizes, we'll do some biking outside and also trial out some of the power wheelchair and the specialized stuff.
And then we have the other things in here.
So if you all are comfortable, if we could split into two groups, both groups will get to see both sides of the house, so to speak, but one group will be going with Debbie outside, the other group will stay here, and then we'll switch in essence of time in about 10 minutes, so we'll do a total of 10 minutes each location. During that time, if you have any questions about specific devices, types of patients that might use it, feel free to just ask along the way, and between the three of us and Dr. Creasy, we'll be able to answer as best we can throughout this process. Okay? So, now's your chance to split yourselves into two groups.
So maybe the group closest to the door, go that way. The people that are in interior, stay here.
Perfect.
Organization.
Good to see you. Nice to see you as well. Thanks.
Okay, so here we have some different computer adaptive computing devices. So this is a head mount. So what we have patients do is take one of these reflective dots, put on their forehead or their glasses or their hat, and then this infrared camera tracks their movement, and that becomes a mouse, and then you use a switch to click, or you can do dwell to click. We often do this in conjunction with using Dragon Naturally Speaking, which is speech tech software. So you can do completely hands-free computing that way if you don't use a switch. If you use a switch, you can do hands-free, you can use a switch anywhere. And then we also have a foot mask over here that I have set up that you can try. So it basically, you use your right foot or left foot, whichever way you have it set up, to do the cursor movement, and then it switches. You see you have single click, double click, and right click, and then there's a little scroll bar. So that's another way to do some hands-free computer use. Again, you can use it with Dragon or with an on-screen keyboard, whichever way you prefer. We also have a variety of adaptive keyboards, a variety of adaptive mics, and we have a lot of those out. So you guys can kind of walk around and take a look, or you can play with this stuff if you want. Then over here, we have some environmental controls. So if you go ahead and hit that little yellow paddle right there, you'll see the fan will turn on. Oops, that one too. That one, go ahead and hit
that one too.
When that one says television, go ahead and click it next time around.
So remember from last week we had Henry Evans driving one of the Beam remote
call that you just activated.
Oh. We had
perfect.
Remember Henry Evans, one of the guys who was driving the Beam. He was using a reflective sensor on his glasses to control the Beam remote presence robot. So that same technique is used here to access an on-screen keyboard and the other normal functions of a computer.
And so the environmental controls, so you see those ones are switch activated, but it's also voice activated. So someone who has a good strong voice but maybe no functional movement can activate, can they control their environment? They can open doors that way. They can do their window shade, the fan, the light, the TV, DVD, stereo, you name it. They can pretty much do it if it's a power system that has an on-off. Mm-hmm.
And this could be retrofitted into homes.
Right. Those can be installed in the home. It's a fair, the little box right there with the yellow switch on top is a very robust system. Having that installed in your home can be upwards of $20,000, but the actual box itself is about $7,000 or $8,000. But then there's much simpler, just infrared or X10 that uses the house wire, and that's much cheaper to do fewer devices. We have some other environmental controls over here, which are just really simple, like a bigger button, universal remote for someone who has kind of fine motor issues and needs to be able to, or vision issues, and can access it a little easier that way. We have a TV remote that's strictly a switch. So it scans through here and you just hit the switch when you want channel up or channel down as it scans through. We have a talking clock. We have switch activated and voice activated phones. We have phones that can amplify your voice outgoing, can amplify the incoming sound. And there's a California telephone access program that can get the patients the phones or any person a phone. You pay into it, and if you have a landline, you pay into it regularly, regardless of whether you use that service or not, so we always kind of have our patients start there. And then a few more mice and things like that, and then a couple others. This is another robust, and this is another robust environmental control system that can be switch or voice activated. And then for the speech devices, we have kind of some communication boards and then just a little laser light here. That, you know, if somebody has a little bit of movement, they can kind of point to what they want to say. Or this one can be mounted on the glasses if they just have head movement. We have ones that can be held in the hand. So that's a really simple, quick way to do some communication if they have some movement. If they don't, we can always put a head mouse, too, on what's here. This is kind of a more robust speech-generating device. So that can be used with a mouse, touch screen, eye gaze. So your eye movement is controlling it if you have no other movement, or a head mouse. That can also be used as your computer for computer access. It can also be used for basic environmental controls. It can activate TVs or anything that's infrared. And the phone can run through that too.
Maybe an important thing to note about the laser is that it's good for communicating with somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the eye gaze stuff, you know, you can operate a computer all by yourself without anybody else there. So there's a difference in the kind of independence you get and the use characteristics, you know, when you would use it. So,
right. If you want to do communication online, which a lot of us do through Facebook, email, what have you, a system like this is going to work much better than any kind of a laser system.
So this may be kind of a dumb question, but these little stickers, like if you need to put it on a new thing and you don't have the mobility to use a mouse, how do you actually take one of these stickers off?
If you don't have the ability to have any hand function, someone has to set you up. Someone's going to put your glasses on for you if you wear glasses. Oh. Someone's going to put your hat on, your hat. We have a patient who doesn't want glasses on, a hat, she wears a little headband with a dot on it. So somebody sets her up. And then once she's set up, she's totally in.
So we're saying similar to dressing, there needs some attendant care to help with that, transferring into the chair.
Right.
You guys can imagine that this is a more passive simple system, for example, right, with the laser pointer. It requires the other person to guess. There could be, if there's tremor involved, emotion involved, it could be more difficult. Whereas a more complex system, like you see behind you, where the person can actually type in if they have some hand movement, or can even use an eye gaze system to point and click, that'll help generate. And if you're familiar with Stephen Hawking, you've probably seen him and heard that application. I don't know the exact system he uses, but I'm guessing it's probably similar to that system or maybe a different vendor, but it's that type of interface.
Right, and these have a little bit more of a learning curve, too. So you have to kind of look at the cognitive ability of the patient. Some patients can't learn to use something like that. So we're always going to start kind of low-tech. And before we even do that, we may try an iPad or another type of tablet with a speech application on it if they do have hand function, that kind of thing.
And just to add, and then you guys, while we're talking, just feel free to start play. You know, mess around, touch stuff. You're not going to hurt it. One thing to be thoughtful of is the mounting system. So if you're thinking about from an engineering perspective, the user interface, if somebody can't move physically, it might have to be put in a place or in the proximity to their wheelchair, something to that effect. And so for an IVA system, for example, from an optimal angle, that's a required mounting. So you might have multiple factors that are going into helping the person be successful, both their cognitive functional ability, the physical proximity, and things like that.
Right, and also when you're looking at how are they going to access, you want to look at different types of switches and how you're going to mount that switch. Say they can only use their foot, they can only use their knee, their shoulder, what have you. So, and then we have a couple cognitive devices here. So this is a reading pen for someone with like dyslexia. It's something you have to hold the pen just the right way to scan it. It's not the greatest thing in the world. But then it's going to read it and it's going to read it out loud. The volume's
really
low.
You see what this looks like after I take a flash picture.
For something that's kind of short, like a mail or a grocery store.
Do you see how bright it got?
Yeah.
And then over here is the smart pen. So I don't know if you guys have seen it.
Yeah, I got a couple of them.
So basically,
see how bright it is.
Yeah.
And a pen, and it syncs. So for instance, somebody took notes here before on something they were listening to. So if you just click here, it's going to play that. And they say, oh, I didn't want that part. I want this part of the lecture. It plays it back from there. So it's like a digital recorder where you don't have to rewind and fast forward. You can just link it to your notes. And then this will also sync to Evernote so that you'll always have your notes with you if you guys use Evernote or know Evernote.
Yeah, they're actually Mountain View. But it's interesting to recall that this is a commercial device. It's not meant for just for people with disabilities. It's a general commercial device.
Right.
And this one is as well, I believe.
Right. And the goal is to maximize function. And so if somebody has an impairment due to a medical condition, they might need something. But if somebody's not impaired due to a medical condition, they still might have an added value proposition. Where this would be helpful, for example, just to think about, people might learn better auditorily, some other people might learn better visually, et cetera, and proximally. Does that make sense? And our clinicians can make that assessment. Based on that assessment, then they would know how to recommend a certain type of device. So this example right here, somebody learns better auditorily or a mix between both, they might have that recommended. I've got the Mickey Mouse hands here as an example. Why do we have these here in the lab? If you want to try them on, they're clean and safe. But if you imagine if you have a lack of fine motor movement, this could actually be very similar to what your hand may feel like. Does that make sense? Now imagine if you want to put it on to try to operate a normal keyboard interface if you have this type of difficulty with fine motor movement. Does that make sense? And so if you guys want to try that out, let's give you a frame of reference or example about why some adaptive switches, different sizes, different types of keyboard, different interface might be of importance. Or you can just conceptually understand that as well.
Yeah. I'm not sure the red button is
So you can see how these are adapted to be used with regular computers, and that's really important because we know we talked about labeling of a person with disability. If they have to get specialized equipment that labels them as disabled, but this just enables them to use a computer. So it's a much different concept. Yeah, so this one actually has a camera here that looks at your eye, and you really have to be, in a seated.
Let me grab a chair from my office, and we'll pull it out here, and we'll let you, here we go. We'll just try this out.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm just going.
This would be really neat for you to try.
Do you want to try it out?
Richie will try it.
Okay, so go ahead, grab a seat there. I'm just going to slide this over here, so anybody behind
us. This is so cool.
Double click sometimes doesn't work. You have to change
the
slow down the double click speed in the settings, which I think you have it set on that computer to do.
So right now, I can't see you there. All right, so we want to get you propped. There you go. There's a frame. You sit up taller. If not, I'm going to adjust this. Perfect. Okay. So you can imagine.
Oh, okay. See.
So here's the difficult part, right? If somebody can't move physically, right, we're obviously going to adjust our mounting system. If we can do through a series of different controls. And Karen, just jump in here if you want to. But right now what we're doing is basically calibrating an IVA system for this interface. All right? So just hang tight there for a sec. All right? Now close your eyes. Just blink. Now I'm blink. All All right, now start, go to test eye tracking. Just move your eyes, not your body, towards test eye tracking. Do you see, all right, now you're in improved eye tracking?
Oh.
That's okay. Wow. That's all right, you're actually doing it. Do you see how that, the color is moving around?
All right.
Oh, now, don't move. And when you blink, is how you, now click, blink your eyes when you want, when you get on the object. All right. Maybe I'm having a problem. Hold on, so let's try it again. We'll go back to the dashboard. And alright, I'm going to try again. So what you're going to do is just use your eyes. It's not the easiest thing, okay, but we train people. Right. Use your eyes, and then, there you go. So when the object comes up, go to the beach ball and blink your eyes. Without moving your head.
Okay. No, you can slow it down too, bro. So you go back to
the dashboard. Give it a blink. Don't be afraid. There you go.
How fast should the blink be?
Just blink
it. As soon as the blue color is around the square, that means you're in the right place.
Blink it.
There you go, blink. Hard blink.
There. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
So this is part of the training that will go along.
Oh.
You don't have to be perfect.
That's pretty good for a first time.
That's pretty good for a first time.
Yeah.
And if anybody else was trying, so what this could then do is then adjust the interface that you saw with the screen, and you can imagine somebody could move their eyes. That's actually valuable for somebody who needs to call for help, right?
Right. Yeah.
Which.
Right. Okay.
You're all right. Oh. But this is a fairly complex augmented alternative communication.
What are we talking about as far as price for something like this?
You're looking at, what, about 7 to 10?
About this one with the eye tracking is probably more like 10 to 15.
Yeah.
Without the eye tracking, you're looking about 5.
And the reason it's that expensive is that it's a specialized device.
Correct.
Yeah.
Now some of these, and you can imagine this is the opportunity for new types of devices. So there are apps, Poloco 2, for example, which can be a text and then it converts to speech, which might be, I think the app's what, a couple $100
and $200.
$200 and the iPad. Right. And the iPad is, you know, $250, whatever it is. And most people have those. And that could be used. Now that's not going to be able to be used with an eye gaze system, right? Because somebody's not going to be able to effectively do that. And the interface into other areas, like other computer technologies, won't be there. But if you just want somebody to simply be able to type and then text and convert that to speech.
And then now with the newer iOS, they can do a switch interface, but it's kind of slower and clumsier.
Right.
Than something like
that. You just saw that at the conference. And we just
it's been out, but we don't have it yet. We're waiting to.
Order is in. So, for example, here, this is for local, right? So we can be like, I was trying to say something nice to you all, and I'm okay. All I can see is give me some water and my straw.
You just put
on
the keyboard and type. Are you in the Prelocor or are you in the
Prelocor? Yeah, I'm in Prelocor too.
I
want
to get out of it.
Let me start. Let's try it again. All right, we're doing that.
You can get the answer similar to something like that. But you can have pages that are phrases and that open other folders so it can say, how are you? Or I want to ask about your, and then it can say wife, son, daughter, friend. So you can fill all that in. So they just click a couple buttons and they get a whole sentence versus typing out. And this one has the same thing.
This one has the same thing, which I can adjust. I'll just take off the keyboard only. Okay.
So you can see all these things need to need to be set up by somebody. So, and it has to be somebody that's knowledgeable. So that's an issue.
So you've got a keyboard here. You've got phrases. So we could say, I don't know why I say QGIT, but
that's it. What does that get you? What do
want
you?
To.
There you go.
You.
You.
I don't want.
Want.
So that'll be something for somebody who's non-vocal, obviously.
Important.
And some of these, have interfaces so you can do email.
Right, this one does.
This one is a full Windows computer.
Yeah.
It has everything.
The most important to HLMG.
See, because I typed out and I got the thing right, it didn't say thing. But you'll see it adjust the interface. But what we can do is we can customize this through the training process so that eventually you can have
So this one is Earthling, right?
The most important Earthling.
Right. So, and we could pre-prep phrases.
Pretty good.
You can pre-prep all sorts of information. So you
and
can.
It has different voices, male, female. Right. Does it have British accent?
Does it have Stephen Hawking's voice?
Can you type that with Eli?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I'm asking. Who wants to sit down and try it? That is trying to get you going.
You can try it.
Don't
it.
Be afraid.
We have glasses. Is it?
Here we go. Would that work?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, see. Right, so what I'm going to do is we're gonna take you back in. Yeah. So we're gonna take. All right. Now, let me set this up. I'm gonna lower the. No, the goal is to actually get you to do it with the eye.
And sometimes it has some issues with glasses.
So we're gonna try.
That's one of the downsides. Sometimes it doesn't.
So that's rough.
This is where our lab like this really comes in handy because people can try things out before they buy it.
Right, and we have different like brands that do the same thing. So like that's a different brand, that white one over there, but it's the same basic idea.
Okay, so let me back up here. We're just going to go to the start screen where we're going to trail the. Let's see if this works. Let's go to make. There you go. Right, so we're going to calibrate. We're going to test the eye tracking. All right, so when you see the ball, just move your eyes to the location and then blink.
Don't
get there.
Don't nod your head.
It's actually difficult for folks who have full mobility because we tend to move our heads a lot and move our bodies a lot, right? But somebody who can't for maybe ALS.
It's not tracking super well because otherwise you'd like, yeah, it's not tracking.
So the glasses?
It could be the glasses.
Try once more. Give it another try. We'll make you a disabled person.
The glare might be difficult. The glare is having some difficulty.
So you can imagine the problems that a person might have with this, and you just have to work through them. So none of this stuff is bulletproof. Yeah, but it's a lot better than it used to be. I mean, that voice is like, it's really superb.
Yeah, no, it's much better to have the different accents. And we can even do voice banking with some folks. So if we know somebody's going to have a progressive disease where they're going to lose their ability to speak, so like ALS, for example, what they can do is pre-prep that by voice banking. They can read a variety of words into a voice bank, and that could be then later used for an interface so that they, while they lose their actual ability to speak, their voice remains stable.
You know, it's usually great for phrases with emotional content, like to tell your wife I love you, or to, you know, that kind of thing. But we usually
you know, they actually built a whole vocabulary for Roger Ebert. Remember, he had throat surgery and became non-vocal. So they went back and they went through all the recordings of his voice, and they actually built a synthetic voice for him that,
to me, it didn't sound like him at all. There's Model Talker, which is a website that actually creates a synthesized voice if you do a bunch of different phrases, and then they synthesize your voice for you.
Okay, yeah, so all sorts of neat stuff.
Okay,
switch. Everybody here, go outside.
What you're experiencing is if you had a functional limitation in your hand feel like that, we probably would not issue you that because the interface is going to be different, right? Yeah. You keep trying to. But we might issue you a keyboard that's a larger screen keyboard or another keyboard.
Yeah.
Okay, switch, guys. You're having too much fun out here. We need to share.
So we got a ticket. We really need to make a difference.
Well, I can see you got a lot of new devices since last year. You know, this chair is new.
Okay.
That bike is new.
Trying out some different things. So yeah, I'll just do a brief overview real quick, and then I'll let you guys jump on the equipment. So we have right here is a hand cycle. There's many different types of hand cycles. So this one is primarily for someone who has, let's say, a spinal cord injury, but they have good function of their trunk and their upper body. So when you're upright, you can actually get your whole trunk involved, so you can get more power through your pedal, and the handles are a lot wider. Now to turn, usually you just pump like this, because if you turn while you're pedaling, it's going to hit your thigh. So usually you just pump it like this. So when we do these trials, you kind of can see what that feels like. The other thing, they make these very, very recumbent, so it's more like a racing position. And that would be, who do you think that would be for best for? What type of impairment? Imagine who would be this.
Well, it'd be somebody who's a professional hand bike racer.
Yeah, so racing is one reason, but then somebody who has like less use of their trunk can't really hold yourself up in this position. So if you lay back, with gravity, you know, kind of holding you in the chair, so that's perfect. And then they just use their upper body, so you can get, you know, people with higher level injuries, spinal cord injuries, and those. So I think the brake is right here, and then the gears are all on the handlebar, so somebody doesn't have to take their hand off at all, which is kind of nice. Different version, so you can try that one out. And then we also do have a bunch of different types of, these are called trikes, and there's two versions. One is the one wheel in front, and then the other one is over there with the two wheels in front. So this one allows for, let's say, more access to get in and out. So if somebody has a wheelchair, much easier than getting in that one. Also, you can see the height of this bike is a lot higher than the one over there. It's a little bit more sporty. This one is set up for someone who doesn't have much grip strength. So there's a coaster brake. So if you pedal backwards on this one, it'll slow down. So you can kind of see we can customize these bikes for a lot of different needs. The brakes or the gears were all switched, you know, over to, so you can have the gears on one side or the other, depending on which hand is more functional. And then, of course, the seat back reclines, and the seat height can go up and down too. So these are all very adjustable for different. This is ended up being for someone with ALS, you know, like that population. So, and then you've got the bike over here, which is more of a for someone who has balance. Usually we get these for people who have balance problems. There's a parking brake down here just to let you guys know so you don't pedal with the brake on. This will be a little bit harder. But to get in and out of here, I usually tell people to come and hold on to the tires because that way they have something to hold on when they sit down. And then once they sit down, they can step over. So you can see this is not an easy one for someone who's got a wheelchair. It's harder to step over like this than most of our population. So you have to have pretty good ability or strength in your legs to get down. It has the standard like two-strip shifter for like a regular bike. And this one has disc brakes, so just a warning to put the brakes on real easy, because if you put them on hard, this thing can't. And I've done it before, so I was like, actually, the first group, that's what happened. So it goes really fast, too. So just you can try it and see, compare the difference between the two. That one might turn a lot sharper, like, you know, on a, if you want to do go slowly. But this one can do quickly at faster speed. And then we also have how does this one turn? It's with the, right here. So you can see it's limited to how far it turns. You know, compared to the one over there, you can see the front wheel will turn pretty sharp. Yeah, make it a little tighter. And then also, this is a sports chair, so you can use it for not only basketball, but you can use it for tennis. And why do you think the wheels are cambered out like that?
Somebody bent them.
Yeah.
They bent them during use.
No.
No.
Oh, it's harder to fall side to side.
Yeah. So it gives it more stability, and then also, how about the way it returns? So it's made really for quick turns. So you can try that out because it's harder to actually go in a straight line with this, but it actually is great for turning. So try seeing if you can also dribble the ball well.
Yeah, that'll be a challenge.
And then also has these anti-tippers, and it apparently, I mean, you can still tip these things over. They're going at really fast speeds, but it makes it more stable.
I showed the class the beer commercial where they were all playing wheelchair basketball.
Oh, yeah, great.
So
all right, so you got an idea.
Okay,
right,
so
this is the power chair. So if you haven't had a chance to try this, it'll show you the tilt, what the tilt feels like, the recline, and then we can drive this around as well. So anyway, I'll be over here with this one. And then you can make like big circles around.
Yeah, make laps.
Make laps and have some.
Okay, start slow, slowly. So you can see.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, if you haven't driven a power chair, this is a good chance to see what it feels like.
Your legs don't require
this one's not fitting very well, but
That just shows you know the need for customization for wheelchairs as well. The hard thing is to be.
So drive one is mostly indoors. We program these kind of really slowly in the inside, and then two would be like an outdoor and a mode, and then three would be like if you're driving
Yeah, but we have a project that's looking at that. And Jason is one of the people on the team.
Oh, good. As somebody over there. Yeah. Okay. Perfect. We were just saying how hard they were saying, gosh, it's really hard to back up.
Yeah.
So that is a very good project.
Yep. Yeah, he suggested it. Yeah. Uh-oh. Julia is a race car driver.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. she's not breaking any speed records.
I hear. Oh, you know, it sounds like somebody's brake or parking brake might be. Oh, yeah, maybe check.
Duncan, you're listening now. That's part of the challenge.
Right. How much do you think, Julia, how much do you think a chair like this costs?
Like $6,000?
No.
More?
Yeah, yes. a lot more.
Really?
Let's ask Debbie. Debbie, we're trying to figure out how much a wheelchair like this might cost.
Well, it all depends on the electronics.
Yeah.
On like what's put on it.
Is this one specifically?
This one,
I'd say 25.
Yeah, I was going to say either like 30,000, something like
the
that.
The race one that I'm driving is less than half that.
Yeah. And it doesn't even go nearly as fast.
If you want to see what the tilt feels like, go ahead and sit down. And then it's just that sometimes that's
okay.
Kind of interesting.
Why do you think a person needs to be tilted?
It's
not obvious. I haven't talked about it.
All the way
so you could, but the main reason
is people,
going back will recline you.
So then what was it? So why was it good?
So if you pause, it'll go back. So now it's going.
And the reason?
So yeah, why would you want to tilt back?
Eating maybe? If you
Nope. Is something.
Is it easier to talk to people if you're like kind of more face like angled at them?
Nope. Think of someone with spinal cord injury. You know why they would need to
move their blood around a little more.
Have to like lean forward to look down. They have to.
Sometimes.
Where
circulation?
You're getting close. Yes, that's
usually,
it.
What did you say?
Circulation.
Right.
Yeah, it's usually it's unweight there.
Yeah, so if you're sitting on one spot for a long time, all the blood moves out from there.
Yeah.
And if you do that for more than 10 minutes, you can develop pressure sores.
Yeah.
And how much is one pressure sore worth in the VA? to treat a pressure sore. One pressure sore, $50,000.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
So this is pretty much standard on all of our chairs that have tilt and recline because of that. You know, we can't
For people who are quadriplegic, who can't feel their bottom, they're going to need something like this. And people who are in manual chairs, they have to do a pressure relief as well, but they have to do that. They can do that on their own.
But
they have to actually lift themselves up a little bit and change their position. But you need to also get a really good cushion for any wheelchair because that's your interface between you and
too hard on one spot.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, they've done things where they cut out pieces to match your bottom, and sometimes they do them custom.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's really important.
How is this holding me up?
Yeah, I'm not going like that. Yeah, like that position.
I'm just going to mess tip over.
No, you won't tip over. These are very. Trying to get you back.
Move your hand away.
Oh.
No, I'm
okay,
not.
Go ahead and hold it.
Controlling Debbie. There we go.
But that's how people.
So that's called tilt in space.
Yeah. Okay, now to drive it, you're going to push that forward, and yep, and then you're going to go ahead and push whatever direction, and yep. See ya.
So how come, why do you think that both pedals are on the same side?
Oh, hold on 1 second. Do you want to have a cable to
point your favorite.
This one.
That one?
Yeah, that one's really fast, but it makes good stuff.
Oh, they're ready.
Yeah,
that kind of pump them. That's yeah.
So we did the first hand bike that had pedals on both sides. Yeah, Dutch one did that.
Oh, cool.
And we also did a, one of the researchers did a communication device for people with aphasia. Do you remember that?
Oh.
And Graphica. Have you heard of that company?
No.
Yeah.
Actually, that's great because that's one of the things that many people have this idea that it's not going to work for people with aphasia.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, he did that over at the VA. So if you ever get a person with aphasia, you need to check that out because it not only helps them, but it actually can cure them.
Wow. Okay, so who would I contact?
Me, and then
the
company. Okay. Or just go to aphasia.com.
Okay. No, that's great.
So that was something done at the VA. On an original Mac. You know, the first Mac class. Before the first Mac that came out, after the Apple II, he did it on a Mac the first time.
Oh,
so,
cool.
Yeah. Nice. So all the it's like, it's, you know, like one of those communication aids, but with the verbs are all animated, and so the person can select the action, and there's... Whoa!
You can see how strong those brakes are. Does anybody have questions on the bikes after riding them?
Those electric wheelchairs are really fun to drive.
So those can be programmed because not everybody has as good a control as you guys do. Mm-hmm. So you can, if somebody has a tremor, you can actually tone it down for somebody to drive with a tremor.
Gotcha. I guess so in wheelchair basketball, you get three pushes and then you can...
That's actually a little tall for a wheelchair basketball. A lot of times they're much lower to the ground.
Yeah, I think that one.
Here he comes. Don't hit the wall.
Yeah, because those don't turn as sharply as you can tell. So you can pump the handlebars at the top.
Oh, that's the only one that can go back, right?
Which one?
The one with the handlebars.
Yeah, you can push backwards with the wheels, but you can't
really drive
backwards.
All right.
Yeah, but the
hard one's
not
go, Maya.
Or not.
No, not really. You have to kind of push on that.
Pretty. Yeah, this thing is.
Ready to? Okay. Yeah. I think what we should.
I think we can finish at the bottom. We could just swing by.
No. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to tell the students. You know, it's 5:30 for those people who need to go. This is the time, and other people will go with us.
Okay. Okay. I mean, there's nothing. I think this is the most of the equipment down here. But just say hi to a patient.
No, I think it's good to see that part, the human part. Okay. Finish your lap, and then we're going to go inside. Grab all your stuff, and we'll go in the room here.
Yeah.
Okay.
OTPT room. We might just go to a patient room now.
Oh, okay. I don't know. We'll
either,
see how many
people
we have.
See how many people can make it.
Yeah.
I mean, we can do either one, but it is.
Okay. Well,
we'll have a preference.
Okay. Everybody, it's 5:30, so people who need to go, this is a good time for you to head out. Thank you for coming. For those who can stick around a few more minutes, we're going to go with Dr. Creasy and talk to an actual veteran to get his point of view. So if you can stick around a little bit longer, I think it'll be informative for you to see who benefits from all this technology, okay? And so if you're leaving now, I'll see you on Thursday. And if you're going to stick around, wait here until everybody leaves that needs to leave, okay?
And then we'll go down as a group gallery.
Yeah, we'll go down as a group. It's up to you. 5:30.
So thanks to Dr. Phil and Dr. and Karen and Debbie for sharing time.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Hope you got a good feel for some of the stuff. I'm glad everybody got to try it out. Yeah.
I got two more. I think it'll work. It's a Jewish fancy.
Okay. Well, I have room in my car. Just got back in bed to have his dinner. Had a full day, had all sorts of procedures done to him, so he's a little beat. He's actually out of his chair, but we can take a look at his chair, which has combined some of the features that you've seen, because he's essentially paralyzed from the neck down, so he doesn't have any use of his arms or legs. But like some of these patients, they describe themselves as normal from the neck up. Normal brain, and smart people who can operate correctly. And this particular veteran, not only his wife helps him look after him, but they have an adult son with a disability as well. And he's physically in his 40s, but mentally probably just like a toddler. So it's a very difficult household. You have your husband paralyzed from here down, and your son with a mental age of a toddler. But people put up with a lot sometimes. So if that's everybody, let's just get out and see them.
Do you have a question?
Yeah. Is it going to be more strain on our host to have such a big crowd? Would it be easier for them to
I think it'll be okay, but you know, we can take turns. But thanks for thinking of it. That's probably something we have to think about, as long as there's roommates and that, because you know, we had a full day. So I didn't want to overstress him. He was a little anxious about meeting a big crowd. This crowd is more manageable, I think.
Yes, we're relatively harmless, too.
Oh, yes, nobody can tell by looking. Small intensive care unit where people can be on a ventilator if they can't breathe by themselves. And it has dark doors, so the nurses in the nursing station can keep an eye on people and see if they're getting in trouble with anything. But they can be looked after with fairly intensive care level, not full intensive care. They really need that, they go to the main hospital. But because people are finding they have so many different issues, paralysis of arms and legs, loss of sensation, loss of control of the bladder and bowel, the pressure ulcers. It's very complex multi-system care, so they prefer to be here where the nurses know about all those systems.
Yeah, isn't this sort of new? Because I don't remember it.
Yeah, it's been a while, but it's gotten more busy.
Okay.
More ventilators. So the nurses' station is like the bridge of the ship where all the control happens.
It's a good analogy.
It is. So,
what's that? Cancel. Quartet, television, view.
Thank you. So Mr. Fraser has been using this as a voice activated via virtual control system to, as you heard, it's just muted the television, which was on, and can do a variety of other things with it. You can see somebody was just helping him have dinner because he wasn't able to feed himself without some help like that.
Yeah.
And then this is this environmental control system. You can see it's relatively simple to look at. Just a microphone and a tube to suck on. Or would you suck or blow? Can
blow.
You do both?
Blow.
You blow. So it's like any communication system. You need a sensory and motor input, output. And then you can program the box to do all sorts of things. But from the patient's human interface point of view, you want it to be simple, intuitive, easy to learn, easy to understand. And there's lots of issues about how you design an interface. Is it an auditory feedback like that one? Is it a visual feedback like some of the other people where they have a screen on their wheelchair or something that they can see visual feedback? But you have to design a really intuitive interface that's easy to use. And that's what Apple's done a lot in designing things like Siri and voice control and so on. How do you make it natural so that the technology is a help, not a hindrance? So, Mr. Fraser, you were injured how long ago?
1986.
So, coming on 30 years.
27, 28.
Yeah, right. And what do you, can you just demonstrate some of the things you can do with the environmental control system?
Well, I can either blow or talk to it. They do the same thing. I'll blow first.
Nurse call. Phone. Television. Turn on. Shut off. Mute.
So he was cycling through different functions and blowing it when he got to the function that he wanted.
There's a voice control or a 7-puff control. Now the 7-puff, you're going through the sequential menu and you have to wait for it to cycle, and if you miss it, you've got to wait for it to go around again. So it's not very efficient design. If you can give a quantized voice command, you can go straight for it. If you've got a good enough vocabulary, you can hit straight the command you want without having to wait for this menu system. So a lot depends on designing in the appropriate kind of intelligence into the system that can make it easy to use. And also, what's it like to be in a noisy room with other people or with other patients who are listening in to all the conversation you're having? Not everybody wants to drive down the street talking to the wheelchair. They might think, looks funny. On the other hand, if you're driving down the wheelchair looking at your GPS, you'd bump into things. So do you want a visual feedback? Do you want auditory? Do you want a headphone? I heard of what some people said they didn't want a headphone because they thought it's bad enough being in a wheelchair without people thinking I'm deaf as well.
Yeah.
So you have to think about all the subjective responses that people might be concerned about. You can also control the bed, I believe.
Nurse call. Phone. Television. Bed. Head. Up. Up. Down. Up. Down.
And you can see that.
Thank
you. So that's mounted on the bed, so when the bed sits up, the tube sits up too, so otherwise you lose control of it, and then what do you do? So you've got to build that in the same in the wheelchair. If you go over a bump in the wheelchair and lose control, then you've lost control of the wheelchair.
On the bed, I can raise the feet up and down, and I can raise the whole bed up and down.
Right, right. So how long have you had this system?
I don't know. I've had it about 2 years.
Right. And what did you do before?
I had my own little system.
What was that?
Didn't have a system.
Did you just have people instead, or what?
No, I had a pillow with a like a little chart board, and I had a phone. I could use my right arm better then. I had a phone that if someone phoned me, I could turn it on and talk to them. I had a remote control that this was all down glued to the little table I had, and I could turn the TV on and off in certain channels, and I did it that way until this came.
Right. So in many ways, you know, we've been working with technology that's been very simple, buttons and very early 20th century kind of technology. Simple mechanical stuff. Partly because simple things are often more reliable and easy for people to understand, but also because we just hadn't advanced into the world where you can talk to Siri and ask Siri to do things for you. And there's a lot of interest for the general public in better human interfaces with your television and your car, for example. Apple and Google and Samsung and all these companies are struggling to find out what's the best way to control your television, and that they still haven't figured that out, whether you wave at it or talk to it or what. And Apple's currently working on interfaces for the car. Do you want a heads-up display? Do you want an eyes-up display? Do you want a hands-free display? What's the safe way to drive a car compared to the conventional ways we've been driving them for 100 years? So this is a good place to be thinking about them, and it isn't always the best to have the latest whiz-bang technology. You want something reliable and simple and user-friendly. And those boxes are fairly basic, but if they're reliable, then they're less frustrating. And so really good design. It looks simple and often operates fairly simply. You know, ideally, it just works. But a lot of thought has to go into making it just work. It may be very complicated on the inside to make it look very simple on the outside. Well, thank you, Mr.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Anything else you want to let the gang know?
I have this in my apartment also. And it is further designed where I can open and close my front door, apartment door.
Right.
Which is great.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing, having something you can have the same system in hospital and at home. So you don't have to learn a whole new system when you come here. Or something that's portable, something you can take on your chair. So it needs to be part of your life, just like, you know, your smartphone might be part of your life.
Anybody have any questions for Mr. Fraser or Dr. Creasy? Well, I want to thank you for sharing your room with us, and Dr. Creasy, thank you again for hosting the class. I think the students got a lot out of it, and really appreciate you being available and so close to Stanford.
Well, it's a pleasure. I always enjoy having you here. I'm on faculty at Stanford, and I think Dr. Jaffe's doing a very creative thing in having such a diverse class and bringing such a lot of different people together. It's really quite unique. There's not many places that have quite this diversity. And it takes a lot of different kinds of people and ideas and interests to be creative. That's one of the sources of what's sometimes called group genius. Getting enough people together as a group, it becomes a genius.
Yeah, they're getting there.
Good, good. Well, thank you. And okay. Congratulations.
Okay, thanks again.
Thank you.
Bye now. Thanks.
How's your time?